Well, isn't it interesting? It's one of the only months of the year that when you see Sean Pesh and I together, I'm the one who's pale and he's the one who's tanned. He is in the UK. They're having their month of summer at the moment. And well, here in South Africa, August is never our best moment, but it's always a good moment to talk markets, as we're going to be doing in a moment with Sean. I'm surprised you're looking so tan, Sean. There have been a heck of a lot of things to distract you from the 1 month of summer in the UK. Clearly, the turbulence in the investment markets has come at probably the, I suppose some would say, long overdue after we've had a bull market for so long, particularly in the big tech stocks. But you don't classify yourself as any kind of investor. In other words, I know I've spoken to you about value and growth, and you say, no, we go and find stocks that are cheap. We find stocks that are great value, and we put our money there. And then when they rise to a certain level, then we find something which is a better alternative for it. So I can't really pigeonhole you, and I'm sure you hate to be even suggested that we can. But when you're looking at what is happening right now, it does appear as though there's some kind of a rotation in international stock markets away from the area that I love, the exponential companies, to something a little more maybe stable.
Alec, I think that's probably right. And firstly, you know, normally it's a month of summer, but I think it's been a week of summer this year in the UK. And that was last week. It's not this week. But look, it has been turbulent. And I think this great rotation, and we are value investors, so we want value. And of course, one of the things that I think fewer people appreciate than they should is that value investors are price sensitive. And so when something hits your target price or what you think is full value or close to full value, but there's another opportunity that's further away from full value, we move. And so I'm always amazed where people think that low turnover is a great idea. I mean, some of the best investors in the world don't even talk about turnover. And I know, you know, look at Warren Buffett and Apple, and maybe we'll touch on that in a second in terms of turnover. When the price is fully valued, what do you want us to do? Sit in the stock? No, you want us to go and find something else. So we value investors, and this kind of volatility is wonderful for us because they're innocent bystanders. They throw up, you know, everything gets caught in the wind. And there's some that should get blown over, but it's the innocent bystanders we want to find. And so volatility creates opportunities, and we like this kind of opportunity. You know, we like this kind of environment when it's easy and everybody's making money. Well, then it's hard to shine. So I think this rotation. I think it's happening, and I think it's and let's just take a step back. I did an analysis a little while ago, and I looked at how value has done versus growth on a rolling basis. I didn't choose a month, okay, on monthly data points, because look, if the month had ended 2 days later than when it did, well, everybody would have been down for the month if the month had ended 2 days earlier. So there's only so many months. So what I did is I took rolling daily data, going back to the first time daily data was available for the value and the growth index. And that was in 1999. So we got 25 years of data here, 5 day rolling periods. And up until the 17th of July, value for the 5 days before the 17th of July had outperformed growth by 6.3%. Now, that's quite a big number. And I went back and said, okay, how many times has value beaten growth on a 5 day rolling period by 6.3% the 25 years? Okay. 10 times had it beaten it, you know, and then plus that. So only 11 times out of 6,600 and something, you know, data points. And I said, okay, if you'd bought value after that period and held for the next 2 years, how would you have done? Value beat growth in every single instance by an average of 18.5% over those 11 occasions. Okay. So I think it's quite interesting because I think what happens is it's a bit like, let's take a sailing analogy or a nautical analogy. Everybody's moved to one side of the boat. And when you've all moved to one side of the boat becomes unstable and you don't need much of a wave to capsize the boat. Okay. And so I think what's happened is everyone's moved to one side of the boat. You get a little bit of a wave. Everyone goes, hang on a second. Whew, this boat's a bit unstable. Let's start shifting to the other side of the boat as surreptitiously and as quietly as we possibly can. But the bottom line is people are now moving their weight. And I think that's what we're seeing. Okay, I think that's what we're seeing. And that's why I don't think it's a flash in the pan. Everyone must just say, don't worry about it, forget it. This is the first wave. You know, there are more. In my experience, you know, it doesn't happen. We've had years of this. It's not over in one day or in 1 month or 1 week.
But I'll give you something in the BizNews portfolio, because we have got three stocks that reported this week or in the last week. Uber, share price went up 10%. Palantir, share price went up 10% in a soggy market. And we had Cloudflare last week, share price went up 10% against a declining trend. So I guess that plays or speaks to the point of, even in a crappy sector, which is, as you are defining tech now, if you pick your shares properly, you can outperform. But in a good sector, when the wind is from behind, if you pick your shares properly, you should be able to super outperform. Or is that a little simplistic?
No, I mean, you should be. You know, you should be. And it depends on how well they're owned. Does everybody in those stocks know? I mean, I don't even know, you know, some of those companies that you mentioned. There's thousands of companies. I only look at the ones that swim into our pond, that tick our boat, you know, tick our boxes.
Uber?
But Uber? No, of course, I know Uber. You know.
You don't know Cloudflare?
No, I don't know Cloudflare.
You don't know Palantir?
No,
come on,
no.
Sean. But you mean you haven't really done that Warren Buffett study of them? You don't know them in the sense that you haven't taken a deep dive there.
Correct. Okay. But I mean, if you look at something, and it's all about expectations. And it's about two things, Alec: expectations and what the outlook is. Okay. So you know, you look at something like Snap. I mean, Snap, we're familiar with Snap and all the rest. You know, they grew revenue 16% and advertising was quite buoyant. Stock's down 47% in the last month. Dell is down 38%, I think, in the last month. You know, and yet Dell, but what were the expectations? Everybody was saying, well, hang on, Dell make the servers that that host all the AI and all the rest. So expectations, you know, the stock went parabolic beforehand. They come out with numbers, you know, their AI stuff was growing 100% or whatever, but it wasn't enough. Or people, you know, it's buy the rumor, sell the news. So that's the story, right? Sell, down 38%. So, you know, these are some big moves. You look at Amazon. I mean, what did Amazon grow revenue? 10% or so. People were a little bit disappointed. Boom, stock's down. Down 9% in a day. It's 20% off the high. So, I mean, CrowdStrike, we're all familiar with the CrowdStrike. You know that it's down 42% from its highs? So this is dangerous. You know, you can get your winners, the ones that you mentioned, you can get your losers. And if you are, and that's why I always think, you know, there's that phrase, conviction. You got to have conviction. I'm going, oh, I don't know. Let's leave conviction to the courts. Okay. Because you can know everything there is to know about Dell. What you don't know about is how all the other investors are going to respond to what Dell talks about in terms of the outlook statement. So be careful about being too convinced that you know what the future is. You can know the company inside out. You can know Apple inside out. Warren Buffett's selling, the stock's down. So we don't know the future. And so we prefer a far more diversified approach. What do they say? You get old investors and you get bold investors, but you don't get old, bold investors.
And you got the sayings. Let's talk Apple.
Okay. Apple. Well, actually, I've just written a piece on LinkedIn, because the interesting thing for me, I'll pass it on to Stu. The interesting thing for me is that, just unpacking that whole thing, you know, Warren Buffett, the news comes out over the weekend, Warren Buffett sold half, Berkshire Hathaway sold half their stake in Apple. And it's a big stake. So I went and ran the numbers and I said, okay, how many shares traded in Q2? How many did they sell? What percentage of the trade were they? They were 9% of the trade. Now that is a big number. You know, you to be 9% on an ongoing basis without trying to influence the prices takes some doing. Okay, so they did extremely well. And remember that the AGM was during Q2, and they had sold some in Q1. So in Q1, they sold some. Buffett's questioned about it in Q2. He said, well, you know, unless there's something extraordinary happens, you know, we'll still own Apple, this, that, and the other, but federal tax rates could go up. Somebody's got to pay for all this debt. And so it probably makes sense to sell a few. And that's what he did. But interestingly, he didn't sell Coke. And they didn't sell American Express, and they've got massive gains there. So the tax argument would have applied to those, but he didn't sell those either. They sold Apple, I think, because revenue is not growing. Okay. And revenue is not growing. It's on 30 times earnings, and those earnings are high. And it's always very important to look at PE ratios relative to the level of earnings. And this is an important point. People say, yeah, but, you know, NVIDIA's on 35 times earnings or whatever. That's really cheap based on where they were. Yes, but the profit margins, if the profit margins are very high, you've got a high PE on high earnings. You know, they say you need to buy commodity stocks on high PEs, but that's because earnings are really low. So the PE is high because the earnings is low, you know, PE price divided by earnings. But when you're paying a high PE for high earnings, you've got to be doubly careful. And that's what I think.
So it's all about the rating. And I think a lot of people say, oh, what's high PE, low PE, this, that. Just to keep the alphabet soup out of it. What we're talking about is how is it rated and what is the expectations? At some point in time, even the best company in the world has to get expensive if people keep buying it. And at some point in time, even the worst company in the world has to get cheap if everyone's selling it. So that's kind of where, if I understand correctly, that's the Sean Pesch philosophy on investing. You make sure that if everybody is really dumb and have underpriced an asset or overpriced an asset, I don't get sucked in with them.
That's right, Alec. I mean, if you wanted to, let's say, buy at a coffee shop and you want to buy the coffee shop and you pay 30 times earnings, what does that mean? It means that for the next 30, if you pay 300 for the next 30 years, it'll take you 30 years to pay back, you know, me, effectively the loan that you took on the coffee shop. That's a long time. So anyway, the point I want to make, I think he's carried on selling, okay, because it would not, you know, the price is higher than it was when he sold and things haven't really changed. The tax rates argument's still valid. So I think he's probably selling. And he's a wily old coyote, full mockster. You know, but the point being, we need to sit up and take notice. Here's the smartest guy in the room, okay, who's done phenomenally well, who is selling. Jensen Huang, every day, 120,000 NVIDIA shares are getting sold. Every day. 1% of his holding. Okay, go and have a look at the filings every day. And I'm going, well, that's, you know, they're just throwing a little shot across the bow that Blackwell, the next chip, might be delayed. Results are out a little bit later, you know, Supermicro's halved, Dell's down 38%. It's time to be careful. People have been very greedy. And I'll give you an idea. And one of the data points in terms of what has Warren Buffett said? He says, be fearful when others are greedy. And look at what's going on out there. We have ETF products that are three times geared to the semiconductor index. Okay.
Explain
that. So for semiconductor. Right. So if the semiconductor index, so they buy, so you, you know, a ETF, you go and buy a basket. So this is a basket of semiconductor shares, NVIDIA, Micron, all those guys. And if the index goes up 1%, well, then your ETF goes up 1%. But that's not enough for some investors. They want to, so some guys have come up with this packaged product, which is three times the performance. So if the index goes up 1%, this thing goes up 3%. How do they do that? They do that with derivatives. Okay. Now, this is not, I mean, this product attracted $2.8 billion of new money in July. It's a $9 billion fund that is three times geared to just the semiconductor sector. And that index is down 60% since July. So, you know,
a lot of people have lost a lot of money on that one. If it's three times geared, it sounds a bit like gambling rather than investing.
Well, it comes back to that point that people have been greedy. And one needs to be careful. The Oracle is telling us, listen, he's showing us the way. He's told us years ago, be fearful when others are greedy. Okay. Nobody's writing about that. He's showing us this is what it means. It means taking your chips off the table on some of these very expensive companies. So that's what I think about Apple.
Not so expensive companies. In your latest fund report, you put one out every month in July, you're talking about defensive consumer staples. And the stock that you highlighted is Molson Coors, a company that South Africans would know well because SAB Miller used to have a joint venture with Molson Coors.
Correct.
Is it really, really cheap? Is that the reason why you've highlighted this particular company?
We think it's cheap. We think it's, you know, the interesting thing with consumer staples, if you take a step back, because a lot of consumer staples companies, which have been very well owned, the Diageos, you know, of the world, the Pernod Ricards, those kind of guys have been out of favor because they got very expensive and alcohol consumption is declining. And they've had to contend with some of the other non-alcohol consumer brands, private label. Times are tough. You don't want to pay £5 for your Kellogg's cornflakes. You pay £1.50 for your Waitrose cornflakes. Okay? So people have been trading down. The difference is beer. You know, you might want to eat your Waitrose cornflakes, but I'm not going to drink Waitrose beer. So I think beer is a little more, well, we think beer is a little more insulated. But having said that, beer consumption is falling. But at least you can have 0% beer. You can't have 0% brandy. Can't have 0% tequila. So, and because everybody has been rushing to the semiconductors, they've been ignoring some of these consumer staples. And what makes, I think, Molson Coors quite unique, first of all, it's being run by some conservative South Africans. And what's interesting is because we've come out of an environment, so they bought that preemptive, so they could buy the stake that, you know, that joint venture you just mentioned, because ABI acquired SAB Miller, they had the right to buy back their share of the joint venture that they didn't own. Of course, they got a good price for that because they're the only buyer. So that was the first point, and they abused and they funded that using debt. Now, over the last, so it was $9.5 billion debt, dollars of debt. And then over the last, since 2016 or so, they've been using the cash generated from operations to repay that debt, nice and conservative. Whereas many American companies have been binging on this low-cost debt, buying back stock, borrowing money at low interest rates, thinking the low interest rates are going to last forever. But as us South Africans know, that doesn't happen. Okay. And so now debt's down to a nice level. They're buying back stock. They're still generating lots of cash. Budweiser had an issue last year with their marketing, and there was a bit of a boycott, and they benefited from that. And so here's, you've got a conservatively run company, 10 times earnings, 3% dividend yield, plus buying back stock. You know, I think it's good. And this kind of, that's being ignored because they're not selling AI computers, semiconductor chips. So those are the kind of businesses we've been liking.
Sean, you say conservative South Africans. Are they ex-SAB Miller?
Yeah. I think that's right. Their CFO definitely is. I think the CEO is as well. Yeah.
So it's a little bit like many South Africans were most upset when SAB Miller was delisted, bought out by ABI, as you mentioned earlier. But if you want to have a play on that kind of a managerial core, well, here we go. And it's at 10 times earnings, which by comparison is very, very cheap for an international beer company.
Yeah, look, Alec, it's not the fastest grower in the world. There are challenges in that sector. You know, it's I think it's number 4 or 5 in the world. But I do like the fact, you know, I've grown up in an environment where your home loan or your mortgage rate went from 15 to 25 overnight. So we all were a little bit scared of debt. Many American CEOs are not, and they use lots of debt to buy other companies, to gear up the balance sheet, to announce accelerated buybacks. Here, Molson Coors, actually, the share price is weaker. They just bought a bit more. And then they announced afterwards, oh, by the way, guys, we bought a bit more than we thought we were going to last quarter because the price was lower. Rather than announcing that in advance, share price rallies and now you've got to commit to buy a higher price. So we like that management style. Conservative, not messing around, cleaner financials, decent prices. Most exciting company in the world? No. Right now, you don't want too much excitement, I think.
Why don't you want excitement right now?
Well, because it's time to be fearful, Alec. Everyone's greedy. You know, they're buying 3 times semiconductor chips. Maybe it's time to buy consumer staples.
And just philosophically, I had a conversation with someone recently who was a serial entrepreneur. We never really heard about that in South Africa until Dave King came around, that there were such things as serial entrepreneurs. It was more a case of you're an entrepreneur, you get to know your business, you actually worked and knew that business well. You didn't take on too much debt and you built it slowly over time. It now appears as though if you go bust, you gear something up, you lose everything. I'm not talking about South Africa, but generally in the Western world. That's just too bad for the people who backed you. And so you go on to the next venture and hopefully you can get more people to give you money to have another try and so on. Is this something that it certainly is something that has been baffling me recently. Maybe we in South Africa are way out of step with the rest of the world. And should we be learning more about using gearing, or does it make those or that system more vulnerable?
Alec, we're not wild about too much debt. You know, you can have a little bit of debt because it improves your return on assets. If you're generating a higher return on capital than the debt is costing you, yes, that's fine, but you've also got to understand interest rates can change. So, you know, and if you hit tough times, you don't have as much leeway. You've got to, if you don't recover, you're going bust. We don't like those kinds of companies. So we're quite conservative about companies with lots of debt. And so, for example, many of the broadcasters, Paramount and Warner Brothers, those companies have got loads of debt from buying Time Warner, from buying CBS, etc. You know, now, and times are tough in the advertising, TV advertising rates, all that's very competitive. You're up against Netflix streaming, losing money. And now you've got a challenged business model with lots of debt. So be careful of too much debt. So we'll rather play the conservative way.
Always or just now?
Most of the time. No, I mean, you know, generally speaking, I mean, there's a place for some of those companies, but if you've got to be, you know, what's the interest cover? What are the covenants? What's the term of the debt? You know, it requires a lot of work. So it's cautious. You know, you've got to be cautious. Be cautious, and especially now, especially when everybody's greedy, and especially with interest rates going up. I mean, that's what we like about many of the Japanese companies. They've got low interest rates. They're sitting on a lot of companies are sitting on cash. Now it's been interesting what's been going on in Japan. And I did. We did write in May. We said, be careful about Japan because everybody's rushing to Japan. How are they getting exposure to Japan? They're buying the ETFs. What's in the ETFs? Toyota Motor Corporation, Honda, and the banks. They're big weightings in those. Well, what's happened to some of those companies? I think around saying Toyota's down nearly 40%. Okay, since from a couple of months ago, some of the banks are down 35%. So when people leave, and maybe that's just something that we need to be careful of because. Because that same sort of concentration is sitting in the S&P 500, okay? And so you can stand back and go, but Toyota's a wonderful company. Mitsubishi's, you know, Honda, selling more cars, great cars and motorbikes and all the rest. When the crowd is too exposed to you and the crowd has to leave, they sell regardless, okay? And I think that's a risk. I think one has to be careful. And, you know, we've got Microsoft down 14.5% and all the rest, and people saying, but it's a great business. Yes, it is a great business. But many of those companies are trading on 1% and 2% free cash flow yields, and those are expensive. Yeah. I mean, Meta, just having a look in the last year, Meta's generated $50 billion of free cash flow. Amazing. They spent $40 billion buying back shares. Incredible. Problem is the share count didn't fall. Because every time they were buying back shares from the employees, what's happening? They're giving more share options there. So these businesses are not being run, well, a couple of them, I would argue, for shareholders. They're being run for employees because you're basically telling me that 80% of the free cash that we generated went to go and buy back shares from employees who are cashing in options. It's no surprise Mark Zuckerberg's he's overtaken, who's the LVMH guy the other day. So I think one has to look deeper and go, well, okay, these are great businesses, but do they offer value? Are you as shareholders going to benefit, or are you getting dividends? Is the money really coming into your hands, or is it just going to employees? Are they being run for shareholders, or are they being run for employees? And in many cases in the US, we find that they're being run for employees, and that's why we only have 20%. It's another reason why we only have 20% in US companies.
Second level thinking. Howard Marks, Sean Pesch, Coupled on the Tote. I'm Alec Hogg from BizNews.com.